Merkel Media.
Welcome to Back It Up with Hammerlane Legends. I am Jack Merkel, and I'm here to deliver you the goods. So this week, we have a freaking great episode for you to flashback on. This is episode 46, Yucca Man Encounter. This was a dope episode because Tony and Brian were joined by Alan. Alan was, he was retired at this point. He was a utilities journeyman for the Marines. But this guy served in Somalia and South Korea. He had tons of awesome experiences, awesome stories, things that he shared with us in his time serving overseas. He had been shot at. He had dealt with a whole bunch of other stuff, a whole slew of things, including seeing the Yucca Man, legendary, dope sort of experience, seeing the Sasquatch-like beast. This thing was just, I loved this episode. I know a lot of people liked it. This was one of our bigger episodes in general, but the stories that he had and that he had shared with us were definitely awesome. I highly recommend this episode. I cannot say it enough. This was an awesome episode. So I hope you guys enjoy it. If you did enjoy it, as always, we say share the show and please just like us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you get your social media. Go ahead to those places, like the show, share whatever you can. I'm sounding like an old geezer, but you know what I'm saying. So enjoy the show.
He put it in park, threw open the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people that really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going to Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed this plane was really low. It went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammerlane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkel.
And I am Brian Merkel.
And we're really glad that you're here. If you have a crazy and wild experience that you want to share on the show, go ahead and shoot us that email. Our email address is hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. You know, we should probably change the Gmail email to something else, I think.
We should.
We should, because Google.
Where else can we go?
There's places, but it's going to cost us money. We'll figure it out. Anyways, thanks for joining us, everybody. If you want to contact us, go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com, and hit the contact section, and you can reach us that way, and that is a better way.
So yes, that is.
Yeah.
Hammerlanelegends.com.
Hammerlanelegends.com. So also, if you want to go ahead and get yourself prepared, because what, 2021, you think that's going to be any better than 2020? Judging by last week, what do you think? Right, Ben?
I think we're in for it.
We're not even 10 days into it, right?
What's that old song? Henry the First. I'm Henry the Eighth, I am. Right? Second verse, same as the first. There we go.
There we go. I mean, we're 6 days into the new year and chaos.
Yes.
Chaos.
It's beautiful.
Oh, man. So, listen, if you needed a sign, there's your sign.
Yeah.
Get ready. Get prepared.
Okay, Bill Engvall.
Listen, you want to make sure you're going to take care of yourself and your family, and that's why we have preparewithhll.com. That's preparewithhll.com. There you can get your emergency supply food and emergency supplies. Click around on the website. Find some awesome stuff that you've been looking for to stock up on to make sure you're good to go. If you get the four-week supply of food, we'll knock $100 off you right there. It's really a great deal, and we're offering it because, listen, the world's crazy.
And getting crazier.
Yeah, and you just need to get prepared. So go ahead and check that out, preparewithhll.com. Now, we have a voicemail line that if you have a story you want to share with us, it's only like a 5-minute story, and you just kind of want to drop it and run, go ahead and call us at 515-585-MERK, M-E-R-K, or 515-585-6375. Either way gets you to the voicemail line, and there you can leave us a voicemail and tell us your story, and it will be awesome. We'll play it on the show. Everybody's happy. But hey, listen, if you got stories, just shoot us that email and get on the freaking show. Right, Pops?
You got that right. We'd love to talk to you.
Yeah. So this week we have one voicemail. And I'll tell you, Dad, it is a long voicemail. It doesn't tell me the actual minutes, but it tells me that there's 731 seconds of a recording, which is probably around 12 minutes. Yeah. So let's see who it is. Caller, you're next.
Hey, Brian and Tony. The Body Snatcher here. A special shout out to Lindsay, who answers the emails, takes care of house and home. And let's not forget, she's raising the kids while you two knuckleheads yuck it up.
How dare you?
Kidding, of course. But seriously, so you guys don't think that I'm a wimp and that I can only drive a hearse. Well, let's face it, a hearse is just a glorified station wagon, right? I'll have you know, years ago, I did drive truck, among other things. It was for the last 12 years of my 26 years working at U.S. Steel. I had no CDL. I was running rogue. Here's the story about the first time I drove a truck. Like many jobs, people go by nicknames. For example, my last name was McCullum. Now, the whole time I worked there, I was no longer McCullum, but Miculo. That was the word. That sucked. That was terrible. I was transferred to another department where I met this smooth Puerto Rican gentleman. He had a much cooler last name, or his nickname was much better. Jungle Ass Motherfucking John. But as a young Christian warrior, I called him Jungle John. One day, Jungle and I banged out this flatbed trailer with parts and material left over from an outage. There was one pallet left over, so John decided he would take it on his forks and go back to Spare's warehouse. He asked me if I knew how to drive truck. Trying to be cool, I was like, come on, man. Shit. If it has wheels or tracks, I can drive it. Then he took off. Of course, I was lying. I had never drove a truck that big before. I could drive a stick, but I couldn't get this thing to move. And so just like when you get in trouble, I'm like, oh, Lord, please. If I do not meet Jungle John back at the warehouse, he will probably stab me. You know how Puerto Ricans are. Lots of prayer, deep breathing. I did figure it all out. And over the years, I learned how to drive anything with wheels or tracks, for real. Now, let's get back to the 1980s, to another very interesting removal. This removal called for all hands on deck. The subject, male, height, 5'9", weight, at least 800 or 900 pounds if he weighed an ounce. Our objective, to remove this grossly overserved, recently deceased man out of a second floor apartment. He lived in an apartment on the second floor of a health food store. Let me reiterate, in case you missed it, we have a man two party pizzas away from weighing 0.5 tons, living 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on top of a health food store. You can't make that stuff up. It's ridiculous. Bananas. Now, back to the program already in progress. This man, obviously way too big to be removed from his flat in the conventional way. We hired a couple of carpenters to remove a large window and some of the wall around it. In addition, we hired a pettibone, which is a mobile crane, an operator, and a signalman to reach into the building where the window once was and extract this mountain of a man. Once he was safely out, the craneman lowered the man into a rental U-Haul. The whole time we were getting this man strapped up, it was freezing. Jimmy had turned down the central air in this apartment to help keep the body from getting gooey. Good old decomposition. Now, back at the funeral home, we managed with a bit of difficulty to lay this fellow on some plywood in the garage. The coroner had to do the autopsy right there on the concrete. My brother and I gladly assisted. After we made a pot of coffee. Coffee, you must realize, is the lifeblood of the funeral home industry. Here's a side note, or like a funeral home hack. Let's say you press your fingers into the belly of a dead person and hold it there for a minute. When you remove your fingers, the impression stays there because of rigor mortis. How did I discover this, you might ask? One night, down in the embalming room, Jimmy, the embalmer, and my brother were engaged in doing the final touches on a lady's makeup. I was in the far corner, giving a gentleman a sponge bath. This man was a mess. If you die in a hospital on the operating room table, they don't even stitch you up. You're tagged, bagged, and sent to, I guess, me in this case. To break up the tension, I would say things like, "Oh, sir, I hope the water is not too warm for your liking." No one ever answered, thank God. Wash, shampoo, rinse, run a comb through his hair. Now he's looking more presentable. Then I got bored. Today, when you're bored, you would just bury your nose in your phone and allow the 5G to turn your brain to mush. Back then, you made your own fun, which I did. I lifted his right arm and held it there for a minute or so, and tentatively let go. Aha! Two of nature's titans went head to head, rigor mortis versus gravity. When the smoke cleared, rigor mortis was victorious. To my surprise, the man's arm stayed bolt upright. Inspired, I walked across the room where Jimmy was, professionally and methodically teaching my brother something that sounded very boring. Courteously, of course, I tapped Jimmy on the shoulder. Hey, Jimmy, that guy over there, it looks like he has a question. He turned around, and sure enough, inquisitively, this guy had his hand raised, as if indeed he had a question. My brother looked up, and he and I started cracking up. Jimmy, on the other hand, he wanted to laugh, you could tell. But he was representing the industry. He was clearly the only adult present. There was a long pause. Oh, crap. Did I fail? Am I in trouble? Wait a second. Then he started to crack. The little boy in him, long since tamped down, started to bubble up to the surface. Aha! There was a sparkle in his eye, just a glimmer, followed closely by almost undetectable, but there it was, a shit-eating grin spread across his face. The floodgates opened, and soon we were all laughing hysterically. Now, in all seriousness, I do not want to offend any of your listeners by discussing any of the following topics. For instance, watching the coroner make the Y incision, vigorously cutting through multiple layers of yellowish-orange fat, exposing the organ. Oh, surprise, surprise. The man died of heart disease, thrombosis, infarction, arterial blockage, something or other. You know what amazes me? A short 32 years later from that point, medical science has eliminated all sickness, all disease, but one, the China virus, COVID-19. But I have faith that in a short period of time, our savior Bill Gates will save us from this disease-y virus as well, and we will all live forever. Forgive me, gentlemen. I might have gotten off topic. My political fervor on occasion gets the best of me. Now, back to the show. Watching the coroner literally straddling this massive man lying on the concrete floor of the garage, it looked like I was watching a serial killer at work. Once the coroner completed his task, my brother and I were left to clean up and sew up. The needle you would use, it looked like an upholster's needle. The twine was thick and waxy. It was called ligage. My brother, he had a thing for gallstones. He had a long string of them. Like rocks, you can polish them up, and they were rather pretty. It never failed. Before zipping up the body, he would always go after his little treasures. As Columbo would say, oh, just one more thing. Remember the health food store with the apartment above it? Years later, my wife, who is a therapist and a good one, up to this point, she was batting 1,000. This proves you can't win them all. She was counseling a lady that lived in that very apartment above the store. The lady was separated from her husband, and they were trying to work out difficulties in their marriage. My wife had several sessions with both of them and one-on-one. I hope the lady kept her receipt because the therapy didn't help at all. It got worse, a lot worse. The news reporter said that the husband gained access to the apartment and shot his wife in all four limbs, then in the head, just for good measure. I imagine someone else must have picked up that body because I was out of the business by then. Now, to this day, in the heat of battle, fighting with the wife, I may bring up this story. Totally joking, of course. It never goes well. I always regret it. Well, there you go, boys. That's my story about the killer apartment. Jeez. Love the podcast.
Wow.
And God bless.
God bless you too. What does he call himself?
What?
The body snatcher.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he needs to come on the show
sometime.
Oh,
my word. You know what? Body snatcher, if you're out there and you are, you got to give us a call and just come on the show and talk to us. We would just love to just sit and talk with you. Yeah. I mean, that would make that you are such an interesting storyteller. Holy crap. That's awesome.
Yeah. If you're local to us, we'll bring you in studio too. So
heck yeah.
That'd be fun.
Oh my word. That would be so much fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things that he said about the pushing on the belly and it's kind of sticking there, it reminded me of a stress ball, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You squeeze it. Oh man.
Wow. And he lived above a health food store.
Right.
I mean, you just walk down the steps, dude. You'd probably call down and have him send it up.
Yeah. You would lose weight just doing that. Jeez.
Wow.
Wow. All right. Well, let's get to the business this week. We have Alan coming on the show. Dad, let's just get right into Alan. Let's go. All right. Today we got Alan on the show, and Alan has never appeared on Hammer Lane, but he has appeared on The Confessionals. Alan,
the other show.
The other show. How you doing, Alan?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. So, Alan, you appeared on supposedly episode 135. You said at 135, you think, and I'll take your word for it, but we talked about the Yucca Man. Give everybody a quick highlight of what the Yucca Man is and what you experienced.
Me and a girl I was dating at the time, I was stationed in 29 Palms, and she was getting ready to move back home, so we decided to have one little last fling at our spot, and it was in October. It got a little bit chilly in the bed of the truck, so we got in the cab, And after a couple minutes, something slapped the back of my truck. She started freaking out, screaming, there's somebody out there. And fortunately, the truck was running. I dropped her in reverse, fishtailed her out of there, bumped something on the way out that broke my rear taillight, right rear taillight, which I subsequently got two tickets on the way back into base. And I was talking to one of the guys on base, and he goes, yeah, that's the Yucca Man. They don't like you doing what you're doing out there in the monument. So
no hanky panky.
Yeah.
He's got something against.
I don't know if he was more mad if he wanted to join in and we left too quick or what. What's going on?
Oh man, what a buzzkill. But yeah, so if anybody wants, they can go ahead and check that out. If you go to theconfessionalspodcast.com and just search for, I have a search bar on the website. So if you type in 135, it will pop up, or type in Yucca Man. Good luck spelling that. And
you're on your own.
There you go.
That's it.
So yeah, you were on the show when we did that, and you're coming on today because you have a lot of different experiences while you were out on the road driving around. Now you don't drive for a living, right?
No.
Okay.
But I have driven the larger 5 tons, deuce and a halfs, when I was in the Marines in Somalia and Korea. I do know how to drive some of the bigger rigs. Had a buddy, he drove, or his dad drove, and he taught us how to drive the truck. But other than that, I've never driven an actual big rig on the road.
So you did driving a lot overseas and stuff when you were in the military?
Yeah. Like I said, I was originally a utilities journeyman. Refrigeration mechanic specific, but when we were in Korea, we were doing water purification for the mountain warfare training facility we were at that time. And with doing that, we're utilizing a 2 deuce and a half water trucks and a 5 ton cargo carrier that we use to move our equipment around and then transport the purified water that we had to the different facilities on the base. And in Korea, there's a lot of hills, and one of the water trucks was a standard. Nobody else in the company knew how to drive standard except for me, so I got stuck driving that one all the time.
Fun.
Oh, it was. It was turboed, and that sucker would run. Even with a full load of water, I could do 35, 40 uphill, and the other truck, you were struggling to get at 15, 20 mile an hour. Wow. Uphills with the full load.
Yeah. So what was it like driving around over there and stuff, man? I mean, being over there, I'm assuming when you say Korea, you're meaning South Korea, right?
So, yes. Yeah,
we were, goes without saying.
Yeah,
we're far below the DMZ zone. I just lost the name of the base we were at. Oh, it was near Korea. And I forget the name of the base. Old age, I guess.
It's all good, man. So you're over there driving around and stuff doing water purification. What I know from water purification is Pauly Shore. Yeah, the water boy.
So, in the Army now.
I mean, I'm assuming it wasn't that fun, right?
No, it was monotonous. You know, we had to truck the water in, then we ran it through our RO systems, added all the correct chemicals, citric acids and stuff like that. And then once we did that, we transported it to the other facilities that, you know, would utilize the water. And we got to do some demolition work. I was with 3rd Combat Engineer Battalion. So we got to play with some C4 and line charges when we weren't doing water. So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I bet it was.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's take it a little off topic here. So your experience with C4, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I like that answer. Maybe.
What just happened over Christmas Day in Nashville, the RV that blew up, is that the kind of damage that would happen from C4?
I think that was more a fertilizer, it looked like, with really? The plume and everything. The stuff that we were using was I think they call it like a smokeless C4. It was mostly bang and no smoke. Mm-hmm. What I saw from that kind of reminded me of Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a nitrate and diesel bomb.
From what
and,
I, from what I hear, there's a lot of similarities between Oklahoma City and Nashville. I've been hearing people talk about that and stuff. But yeah, I just saw the damage today, some more close-up pictures, and it literally just blew up an entire block.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
It's absolutely crazy. I was actually talking to one of the owners of a tattoo parlor that was right on the other side of the street of the RV, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. he was absolutely devastated because, I mean, everything's gone. And, you know, I asked him how the AT&T building looks because his is destroyed, and he said there's damage, but it's still standing. But apparently, I guess it was built to withstand such blasts and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it was fortified somehow from some of the reports I saw.
Yeah. It's crazy times, man. Crazy time we're living in. You were in South Korea, Okinawa, and Somalia. What are some of these experiences, you know, with being overseas and stuff? I mean, I imagine there's a whole, I mean, even outside of driving, there's got to be tons of experiences that you're just like, it's totally different than America. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. Like Somalia, getting shot at driving down the road. If you stop at a stop sign, you're having to beat people off the trucks at really? Times. Oh yeah, we had a genset run from the embassy down to the airport, and it was a minimum 3-vehicle convoy, and we can only get one other truck, and the sick bay was down, so we had to get to the airport, pick up a genset. On the way back, they had blocked one of the main roads. So we got kind of shuffled off onto a side road, and we pulled up to a stop sign, and we had like 4 guys swarm the back of the truck. It was a mid-80s Chevy pickup, and there were 3 of us in the back, and we basically had to butt stroke him off the back and yell at the guy to, you know, get his ass moving. You know, we got people trying to, you know, get in the truck with us. So it was getting rocks thrown at you as you go by. Like I said, taking fire, go through an intersection, and all of a sudden you'll hear the whip crack of, you know, rounds impacting where you were just 2 seconds before, you know.
Wow.
Wow.
Other than, that was pretty much Somalia. Korea, I did all my driving on base, you know, and that was primarily, you know, like I said, the deuce and a half and the 5-ton. And then Okinawa, I did a little bit of civilian driving out in town, but other than driving on the wrong damn side of the road, it wasn't too bad.
I imagine that takes some time to get used to.
And it takes some use to getting back and driving on the right side of the road when you get back.
Yeah, really?
There's a couple times I'd pull onto the street and I'd be on the wrong side of the road, and I'd have to, you know, kind of slap myself and, you know, hey, dumbass, get on the right side of the road.
That's a quick wake-up call.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really thought about how that transfers over kind of thing. I mean, I imagine it gets used to time to get used to while you're over there, but, you know, coming back over to stateside and stuff, I never really thought about, you know, kind of switching gears that mentally. Transition. Yeah, because I know, like, with driving truck, it just happened the other week. I unhooked from my trailer. So when you're backing up a trailer, you turn the wheel the opposite direction.
Right.
When you're backing when you're backing your truck into a parking spot with no trailer on it, you're backing it up like you would a car. And sometimes my brain just glitches and I can't get it. Like, I just can't figure it out. And what helps me, because, like, I'm looking in my mirrors as I'm backing into the spot. And if I just, for whatever reason, my head's glitching, my brain's going berserk, I got to literally turn and put my head out the window and look at where I'm trying to go. And that helps me get my bearings straight. Yeah. But, you know, imagine driving on the opposite side of the road for, you know, too long. You come back stateside and you're just like, it's all weird.
Yeah.
Well, that's like with me when we're stock car racing. You know, if the car was on the trailer, I could put it in any spot I needed to. But once the car was off the trailer and I had to utilize mirrors, I was screwed. I don't know. I just couldn't get that brain to flip to with the mirrors. And I got to the point where we put a stick on the back so I could see where the back of the trailer was so I can get it where I needed to go.
You know, whatever works, you know, whatever port in a storm. So it's crazy. It is one of those funny things that we deal with when you're used to using a trailer or, you know, driving a tractor truck. So I've had that experience too, just going from a tractor trailer to a straight truck, or even in my own car.
Yeah.
When I'm trying to back into a spot, I'm like, what the heck? Why can't I get this? You know, I'm all crooked in between the lines. And I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's there.
Oh, I'll tell you a funny little fact. My wife grew up on a ranch in Northern Nevada, and they did 4-H. And her dad, my father-in-law, he was a truck driver. And with her doing a lot of the 4-H and everything, they're usually hauling a stock trailer. And she could back up better with mirrors than I can at looking, you know, backwards. So
no kidding. I bet she can. Growing up that way?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I
bet. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So I can imagine just driving overseas and coming stateside, it can be a pain in the butt. But you know, when you're over there overseas and stuff and you're doing the driving, and like you mentioned Somalia, it didn't sound like you had a welcoming party, but imagine South Korea wasn't too bad when it came to that stuff, right?
No, like I said, I only drove on base.
Yeah, that's true.
And and it was a wilderness training area. So it was 95% dirt roads, except for the roads coming in and out of the main gate. But when it rained, that's when it would get fun, going up some of them hills. And going down with a load of water was even funner.
Oh, my word, I bet.
Yeah, I guess zoom, 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 right?
Yeah, you better be making that turn when you think you're supposed to be making it, because if you're not, you're going to miss the turn.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I know you mentioned about missing time experience while you were driving. What are we talking about here?
Well, when I was stationed in 29 Palms, I was able to get quite a few liberties to come, because I only lived 7.5 hours away in Arizona, or was 7.5 hours away in where I lived previously in Arizona. And so I'd get a 96-hour liberty, and I'd drive home one day, spend 2 days with the family, then drive back the fourth day. There was one trip. There was a gas station I usually filled up on the west side of Phoenix, and that would get me all the way home. And it was right at 2 hours and 15 minutes drive time. And I'd gotten there a little late. I was about 3 hours later than I usually would be. So that put me right around 8:39 o'clock. So I was looking at getting home around 11:30, 12. And the last thing I remember was leaving Phoenix and then pulling into my mom and dad's driveway at 2:30 in the morning. So about 3 hours later than what I usually would have.
Wow.
And the road that I take, it's not straight highway. It's 50% of it is through some pretty gnarly mountain roads. And like I said, when I pulled up to my mom and dad's house, and it's like when I put the truck in drive, I woke up, and it scared the shit out of me, because I'm like, how did I get here? And then plus I was, like I said, 2.5, 3 hours later than I would have expected to be. And my dad was, my dad knew I was coming, so he was going to stay up and meet me when I got there. And he was kind of freaked out that, you know, I was there at almost, you know, 2:33 o'clock in the morning when I should have been there, you know, 11:30, 12. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm like, I don't know. I said, I just pulled up in the driveway and put it in park, and I'm thinking to myself, how the hell did I get here?
Wow. I tell you what, that's got to be a scary thing. You know, I mean, how many times have, you know, driving down the road, just even in your own car, I mean, you know what this is like. I mean, you know, you drive 3 or 4 miles and you're like, well, I don't remember those last 3 or 4 miles. Yeah. You know, it's been a little while, you know, you kind of get road numb and you don't remember them. But to actually miss, you know, 3 hours, that's a huge
and
chunk
be late.
And be late. That's like, wow, what in the world was going on?
That from that point to my dad's house was right at like 175 miles. And like I said, I probably blanked out at about the 140, 150 mark. And that's, I remember pulling through Apache Junction and getting on the highway 60. And then all of a sudden I'm home.
So, okay, let me ask you, you ran through your mind a million times, I'm sure. Do you have any conclusions as to what could have happened that night?
Not really. I'd driven it so many times, maybe I just don't remember driving it.
How would you explain the lateness, though?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't think it's, you know, where you're going confessional-wise, I don't think it's that. I could have just slowed down to driving 30, 40 miles an hour, and that could have explained the time.
That'd be odd. Do you believe in glitches in the Matrix?
Yeah, kind of some of that, because I have a lot of deja vu experiences. I had one just the other day. I was working at the shop, and this song came on the radio. Somebody yelled something, and I turned around, and it's like, I've already done this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's just neat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scary, but it's neat. You know what I mean? Like, it's. I mean, I get where you know, your thought, you know, like you could have slowed down. Anything could have happened, mm-hmm. you know, one in a million things could have gone on. But it's just kind of a crazy thing. It's like, wow.
I'll tell you, deja vu. I'll tell you the weirdest experience I have, because I've had deja vu plenty of times. I think a lot of people can relate to that. The weirdest experience I had with deja vu was in Dallas, Texas. I'm sitting in a hotel room with Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles, mm-hmm. and he and I were just talking. He's editing some audio, and at the same exact time, him and I both had deja vu that we were both there at some other time having the same conversation. Like, it wasn't like I had deja vu and he didn't, or mm-hmm. vice versa. It was we both had deja vu at the same time, and it was the weirdest thing. Like, I've never heard anybody else describe that before.
Yeah, you know, almost a mutual simultaneous experience.
Yep, yeah,
exactly. And that's kind of weird. That's really weird.
Really weird. It's really weird.
I mean, that's the other show type of stuff. That's the other show type of material.
I know. So you've had an exploding tire. Was that like on like, was it like a car exploding tire onto your car or what?
No, it was I was on my way back to 29 Palms, and like I said, I had my route pretty well figured out because, you know, running a high horsepower engine, you go through gas faster than regular cars do.
Sure.
And I usually got gas right outside of Blythe, California on the 10 at this little stop on the Arizona side, because it was usually 15 to 20 cents cheaper than the California gas. And pulled up to the tank, got filled up, went inside to get a soda and flirt with the one clerk there that I saw, you know, every time I rolled through and, you know, trying to get my thing going. And this little old lady in a brand new Cadillac had pulled out just in front of me onto the off ramp. And so we're cruising down, and she's not getting up to, you know, merging speed. And I look in the mirror, and we've got a truck coming. Well, he moves over to the left-hand lane. And as we're almost ready to merge, and then we get on the freeway, and then he pulls back over into the right lane. Well, this little lady decides she's going to get out past him first. Well, she's passing him at like 2 miles an hour faster than he's going, creeping along. And I'm like, come on, lady, let's get going. And she's just about up to the rear drivers, and as the rear one, I see it. It's wobbling and starting to smoke. And I'm like, all right, lady, that looks like that tire is getting ready to blow. Because I've, you know, mm-hmm. seen, you know, racing, you'll see how a tire will blow. They'll wobble and smoke, and then they'll blow. And just as she got right up to that tire, it's like the sidewalls just exploded, and that gator back shot out to the side, down the door, the front fender, and it hooked onto the front bumper cover and ripped it off. And then it went rolling across the median into the west or eastbound lanes. Luckily, there was nobody there because it just rolled off in the desert. And her brake lights came on, and I saw what was going on. I was already starting to slow down. And she got slowed down, pulled over to the right-hand meet or shoulder, and she was pretty shaken up. I'm just glad she had the, you know, state of mind to not you know, pull a wheel and, you know, spin out in front of this truck or, you know, underneath it, and got over to her, make sure she's okay. And I'm like, hey, you need to pass the trucks a little bit faster than you were going, you know?
Yes.
And we got up, just crossed the Colorado River Bridge going into Blythe, California. And that same truck was pulled over on the right shoulder with the right-hand side rear driver blown out too.
Jeez.
Wow.
Somebody didn't pre-trip.
Yeah, that or so they bought some bad recaps.
I was trying to get some bad recaps. If two of them go like that on either side of the truck, that's, you know, that's somebody buying some cheap, inexpensive recaps to put on their truck.
I mean, we talk about it on the show several times. I mean, I'm glad you bring that up, Alan, because it's a prime example of what we mentioned on the show about passing trucks. Just get past us, because
don't waste time.
Like, I mean, Alan, what kind of damage was done to her car?
Like I said, it tore the side of that Cadillac up pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it ripped the front bumper cover off of it. You know, no major damage. It's mostly body damage. You know, that steel belting is hell on sheet metal.
Yes, it is.
And
if you're driving past a big truck like that and something like that happens and you got your windows down, you can really, that's why you just don't play around. Just get past. I mean, let that be the PSA for the day. You know, when you're passing a big truck, get past. Don't play around. Get it done with.
I had one just this weekend. Had some dude wanting to crawl past a truck on the I-10 coming home from Tucson. And I'm like, dude, I flashed my lights. I'm like, hey, get going. I said, what you're doing is not safe.
Exactly.
You know, because, you know, and you see the stickers on all the trucks. Hey, here's my blind spots.
Yes.
You know? And this guy was in right one of the blind spots, you know, and I'm like, you know, that truck's doing 67 miles an hour and you want to pass him doing 69.
Yep.
You know, it's going to take you 3-4 miles, you know, it ain't going to hurt your gas mileage. You put your foot in a little bit and get around him, you know?
Yeah. Just put it in a little bit, get past him. You can come back down to 69. Yeah. You don't have to stay at 75. Yeah. But get it done with, because it's a dangerous place to be. Whether you're passing on the, which you shouldn't be passing on the right, but a lot of people do, because you let them out, you know, you get over in the left-hand lane, let them onto the highway, and then they ride right next to you, and they don't pick up, and you're like, look, I can't go any faster. I'm at my govern. I'm governed at 67, dude. Move. So you throw the turn signal on, hopefully it'll catch their eye, and they'll either slow down or speed up.
Yeah, talking about PSA, I mean, if people who are getting onto the highway, if you see a truck merge into the left lane, they're letting you get in, they definitely want to get back in the right lane as soon as possible. So once you get on the highway, give them a chance to get over. If they're in their own world and they're just riding out that left lane, then go ahead and do your thing. But give them a chance at least, because there's a lot of times, especially in high traffic areas like I drive, there's a lot of times, you know, you see, you know, 10 cars merging onto the highway, so you pop over. And those 10 cars are, you know, for the next mile or two trying to pass you. And it's just like, just give me a chance to get back over.
Yep. And then the road's yours.
Then order is restored, you know? Yeah, like, exactly. Like, I don't want to ride in the left lane, because then I got a bunch of people behind me trying, because that's the worst, right? So, I mean, people are then riding up on me behind me. So the people that I led on are past me. Then the people that are behind me are all...
Start, you know, getting in the right hand lane.
Yeah, they're getting irritated because they see one car passing on the right and they're like, oh, I'll do that too. Yep. And it's just like, guys, I really would like to get over sometime today. Like, my exit's two exits up from here and I'm going to need to get over eventually.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah. But, it's fun times though out on the road for sure. Now, I saw in your email you were talking about a ghost truck on I-10. What is up with that?
Oh, I had came home. I just finished my Marine Corps combat training in Camp Pendleton, and I was back home for 28 days before I went to my MOS school. And while I was in boot camp, my dad had traded my little mini truck for a 70 Chevy Camaro with a 396 big block in it. And me and a buddy, there was a girl I went to high school with. She was going to the University of Arizona. And I'm like, hey, let's go see if, you know, catch up with her and maybe some of her friends, kind of thing. And
Alan, hang on a second. Hang on. I'm noticing a trend with you between my interview on the confessionals and then this one. It sounds like you're a very opportunistic kind of guy.
Stopping at the regular gas station that you usually stop at on your way into California, yeah. Just before you get there, you get gas and chit chat with the girl behind the counter.
You command has to break you up. I mean, Alan, you dog.
That's awesome.
I love
it. I was a shy kid growing up, and the Marines kind of beat that out of me.
I'm sure.
So I had a little bit of, you know, wild oats backloaded I needed to sow.
There you go. That's it.
Oh,
making
man.
Up for lost time.
Wild oats I needed to sow. That's great. All right, Alan, carry on.
Well, so we got with her and some friends and did a little bit of partying. Well, my buddy had to go back to work the next morning. So we left Tucson. I don't know if I gave a time in the email. I don't remember what time it was because there was a few beers involved. And we're just going through Wilcox on I-10. And there was nobody on the freeway. And I'm running 60, 65. And I'm probably a mile or so out of town. And all of a sudden these headlights flash behind me. And that, you know, wakes me up. And Bruce is over there. He's snoring. He's out. And they come right up on me. And I'm like, what is this Joker's problem? So I put my foot in the four barrels and let that 396 sing and take off. Well, yeah, I leave them behind for a little while. And I look down. I'm running about 110, 115. And like, so I slow down a little bit. And here they come again. They're right up on me, and we're almost to the exit to the highway to go back home to Safford, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to get out here and, you know, get this Joker off my ass. And so I put my foot in it again. He drops back. He switches over into the other lane, pulls up next to me, and it was a yellow truck. That's all I can say. I couldn't tell the make or model. And just as soon as he got next to me, I pulled ahead and the headlights went out and they were gone. I exited my exit and about another hour we were back home and my buddy Bruce is like, what the hell was going on? Why did you keep, you know, speeding up, slowing down? I said, dude, some guy was trying to run me off the road, I think. And like I said, there was, other than tailgating me and getting next to me, that was, you know, the only real aggression towards me, but it just kind of freaked me out that, you know, all of a sudden this guy's next to me, and then now they're not, you know.
Yeah. Was it a tractor trailer or was it like a pickup truck?
It was like a pickup truck.
Gotcha. Man.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean.
That would scare me.
Yeah, it would scare me. That would scare me. I'd feel like there'd be definitely acts of aggression towards me.
Yeah.
The way you described it.
I mean, it just, you know, it sounds like a movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It sounds like Phantasm. Never mind. Tony's just looking at me like I'm a nut. You
dead
know?
Look on my face.
Like, what? What are you talking about, old man? All right.
I don't know what that word means.
It was a movie.
Oh, okay.
Well, that other one, I think it was Spielberg's first movie called The Duel. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. It's an old, it's mid-70s.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. You're right.
The tanker truck chasing the one salesman across, I forget where, but.
Yep.
I'm sure it was a good movie.
Tony's just sitting here looking at me like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. I'm lost. It's like, yeah, okay.
Youngins.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not even that. I just don't watch TV or movies. Like, it's just a common theme. I mean, people are like, you know, you got to check this out. I'm like, probably won't. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have been telling me I need to watch Mandalorian, this new show out. And I'm just like,
Don't make me reach to this computer and slap you around. I'm wearing a Mandalorian shirt right now.
I don't know anything about it. And is it good? I mean, I hear it's good. Everybody tells me it's good.
If you're a Star Wars geek like me, it was awesome.
There you go.
But I heard that even if I'm not a Star Wars geek, I would love the show.
Yeah, it's a good little action flick.
Okay, well.
My daughter loves Baby Yoda, so it's...
Is that where Baby Yoda's coming from in pop culture right now?
Ray Liotta.
Yes.
Did you say Baby Yoda or Ray Liotta?
Baby Yoda.
Okay.
Baby
Yoda, yeah. That's my old ears for you.
I've been
Oh, no, we don't want Goodfellas in Star Wars.
Exactly. Okay, I'm with you. That's why I was like, I haven't seen Mandalorian, but I don't know.
That's a movie I saw. But I've been seeing Yoda popping up everywhere. I'm like, why is everybody... What is this Baby Yoda? Like, Yoda was never a baby. I just over my head.
That does make sense. I didn't know it either. I haven't watched the...
Yeah. I think I'll be checking it out.
It looks like a good show.
So what's up with the man running on the tracks? This sounds dangerous.
This was summer of 89 with the Running Man. I don't know. Do you know Derek Hayes's Monsters of Madness podcast?
Yep.
Okay. I called it in back in like season 4.
I remember that one. I listen to Derek Hayes all the time. I do. I listen to Derek Hayes. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Alan.
No, he's played it 4 or 5 times in reference to other stories.
Yes.
For Tony, I was at the Globe racetrack, and the races got out late. I was headed home, and same thing, the same stretch of road that I've been driving, God, forever, it seems like. It was on the San Carlos Indian Reservation in between Globe and Safford. And it was 2-ish in the morning, if I remember right. And I'm dead tired, and I'm slowing down. I'm running like 30, 35 miles an hour. And cruising along, and all of a sudden something slaps the side window on my truck. And this is a 74 Datsun pickup. We chopped the top 4 inches, and it was lowered. This was right in the middle of mini trucking. And I look over, and there's a dude running next to me. He's either got white stripes painted on him or red. He's white with red stripes painted on him. I couldn't tell you. It's been too long ago. And it freaks me out. I reach over, and I grab third gear and take off. I get 3 or 4 miles down the road, and I'm like, okay. Cruising along, start getting tired again, slow down. And I'm not quite to the Fort Thomas. I'm about 3 miles away. And all of a sudden, again, snap, right on the side of the window. I look over, and there he is running next to me again. So I drop her in the third gear and take off again. By this time, I'm awake. And I get home. I get in trouble because I'm 3 hours past when I was supposed to be home. And from there, that would have been 90. I go into the Marines in 91. I'm stationed in 29 Palms, and it's in between 94 and 95. I get a roommate, and he lives here in Phoenix. We're at partying one night telling stories, this and that, and I tell him that exact same story, and he stops and gets ghost white. And I'm like, what, dude? He had a buddy in his previous unit that he was in that grew up in Lordsburg, New Mexico. And he'd take the same route home, and he had the exact same experience. And I'm like, oh, you're bullshitting me, man. He goes, no. He says, I find his number. We can go call him right now, and you can tell him the same story, and he'll say, yeah, he had the exact same experience. And I think it was when Derek was talking about the skinwalkers.
Yep.
Like I said, he's referenced my call several times with other the skinwalker related stories that have been called in.
Yes, he has. In fact, when you start telling the story, I was like, I'm recounting it in my head just hearing you say it. It's kind of neat to put a face with a story.
Yeah,
you know, it's really kind of cool because I was always fascinated by that story. And that's really cool, Alan. And it's neat that it was you. You know, that I'm actually sitting here talking to you. I'm talking to that guy. That's cool. That is really cool. And I remember that story. I was like, wow. And, you know, I drive at night.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I looked out my side window to see something's running next to my truck. Just listening to that story.
Well, and the running man on the tracks happened in the same area. It was just before I left for boot camp, the summer of 91. We had gone back to Globe for a race, and we're coming back, and there's a train that ran there through there all the time. And we were driving along. Dad was driving, and I'm looking out the window, pacing the train. And just as we get to the engine, and we pull, I don't know, a quarter mile ahead, you can see the train lights illuminate something on the tracks. And I tell my dad, like, what the hell is that? And as the train gets closer, we hear the horn sound, and my dad slows down a little bit. And it looks like there's somebody running down the railroad tracks in front of this train. This train, it's running at night. It might be doing 45, 50 mile an hour. I don't know if they ran mile per hour wise back then. But and just as soon as the train got up onto the dude, it almost looked like he just went, disappeared.
Wow.
And my dad, he was watching the road, and I'm like, I told him, I just think that the train ran over an Indian. And he's like, well, hopefully he might have just jumped off the tracks. But I'm like, still, him disappearing could have been him jumping off to the side of the tracks into the dark. But it was just like, it looked like this guy was running for his life.
Wow.
That is crazy.
I mean, and if you're running for your life, why not just run for your life off the tracks?
That's what I was saying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, there is a tradition in the Native American community. Mm-hmm. Instances like that, that's like a lot of them work still up high. They have the belief if they fall or they're in danger, an eagle will swoop down and pick them up and take them out of the way of danger. Or at least that's something I heard of as an Apache belief, which that's what their reservation is. And so I guess he was figuring, somebody's going to swoop down and save his ass in time, but.
Let's hope somebody did.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything in the paper, so I don't know. That's
right.
So that was long, long ago.
Wow. That's amazing.
So going back to your vehicle getting slapped by somebody running next to it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, did it just look like a normal human being that was slapping? Or did it look like, because, I mean, you mentioned about the skinwalker. Did it look like a skinwalker-like creature?
I said, it looked like somebody that was either red with white stripes painted onto him or the other way around. Almost like,
American.
Yeah, I would think.
Body
paint. Sure, that's what it sounds like. That is just so.
It's interesting.
That was such an interesting story when I heard it the first time. It was an interesting story when I heard it, and it's interesting every time I hear it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, so it, man, wow. What was your thoughts? I mean, did you attribute it to like skinwalker type activity? I mean, in the moment, what did you think was
happening? I had no idea. Like I said, I was 16 years old at the time. I had my interests were like Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster. Didn't even know what the hell the Chupacabra was at that time. I was into that kind of stuff, but I had no idea. And I hadn't, like I said, I grew up close to, a Native reservation and went to school with some of them, but nobody ever talked about that. I had no inkling of what a skinwalker was at that time.
Man. That's interesting. I really wish, I kind of wish I was there with you so I could actually experience too, because I there's so many unanswered questions with what you went through.
But it is just so neat. That is such a neat thing. And the thing, from what I understand, like with the skinwalkers is, a lot of Native Americans don't talk about it because it's supposedly, if they do, it draws its attention to them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It gives them energy to focus in on them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't either.
I can't tell you guys how many times I get emails from people when I mention the word Skinwalker on my show. I get emails, stop talking it, stop saying that name. I'm like, listen, listen, all right? I'm going to say it until something bad happens to Tony.
If he's coming by to visit, he's coming by to visit.
Yeah, I'm not sweating it. But listen, I think that I want to kind of take this back to Somalia because kind of this is interesting to me. Shadow people and high-speed generator exchange at a stadium. What are we talking about here? Because, I mean, you had me at shadow people.
Well, I was on Gin Watch one night, and I forget how many stations. There was no real power in the country. We ran everything off of generators. And so at night, you know, they were... During the day, it wasn't a big deal, but at night, you had to do gin watch. So you had to go around and check all, however many generators we had. Each hour, you had to log, you know, temp, oil pressures, everything like this. So if there's any variance, then they might have to pull one out, you know, for service or whatever. Well, there was one right by the main embassy complex that ran the officer's mess refrigerator. And I was checking it, and I saw something behind a building. And I'm like, what is that? And so I went to go over there, and it's like something ran across the opening where there was just enough backlight. I could tell something passed by. And we're fully armed. We went on Gin Watch with our M16 deuce gear, you know, just in case, because those little bastards would get in the wires, go through the wires sometimes, try to steal stuff out of the tents. So I'm like, oh, great, we got somebody in here trying to steal stuff. So I did like a mid-voice call, you know, halt, you know, identify yourself. Then it ran back the other way. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I run up to the building, and I see something, like I said, a shadow running away from me. And that's when I start sounding off and running farther down, chasing this thing. And it goes through a couple of things, and it disappears in a dark area between two buildings. Well, all my screaming and yelling got the attention of the officer's fire watch and came out, and they proceeded to question me why I was yelling and screaming for somebody to halt and identify themselves. And I didn't even think about it. They had a flashlight on me. I didn't turn it on. I don't know why. But, you know, I get chewed out by their fire watch, and I'm having to stand there at attention, you know, explain my actions to, Boot Louie. And he's pissed because he's having to stand fire watch. And I'm like, dude, I thought I saw somebody out here, and sorry I woke you up. And from there, it just... Everybody kind of, you know, I told them what happened, and like, oh, it was late at night, you were just seeing things, this and that. I'm like, okay, whatever. And then, I don't know, I gave that experience through Derek Hayes's, not Derek's, I'm sorry, Tobe, Strange Brow interview. And from some of the other weird shit that's happened to me.
Yeah, well,
that's weird.
I mean, it being out there fully armed and having that happen and stuff. I mean, I would imagine it would take a full to actually do with what you experienced, right?
Oh, there were times that people would actually wind up tangling up some people and having to bring them into the MPs. You know?
Man,
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, I've always liked being tucked away safely in my own country, and I don't feel so safe here anymore. But hey,
yeah, I hear that.
You know, it's been getting crazy. Lost in Texas, Papaw passes. What are we talking about here?
I shouldn't be laughing.
Me neither.
I just gotten home from Okinawa, and my granddad had a degenerative back disease or spinal disease. And my mom and dad were flying back to Kentucky to be there while he had his surgery. And in the meantime, I'm driving myself to 29 Palms to get checked in. And I'd been there about a month. Supposedly his back surgery had gone well and everything was okay. So my mom and dad came back. I was having some issues getting my truck registered on base. And what had happened, I'd gotten a Red Cross call from my dad. And I was on duty at the time. I was working night shift. And my dad's like, yeah, there was complications and Papa had passed away that evening. And they're like, I'm getting ready to drive back there, get the funeral ready, you know, get everything taken care of. He's like, can you get here? And luckily I had a really good gunny sergeant because I told him what had been going on. He's like, all right, we'll do a hardship leave for you. And we'll get you 10 days to get back to Kentucky for the funeral and get back here. Well, unfortunately, that night was busy and hectic. I managed to go back to the barracks, got my uniform packed up, got other clothes packed up, and the truck loaded up. And at 8 o'clock the next morning, they dismissed us, and I went on my hardship leave. Like I said, it's a 7.5 to 8 hour drive from there to my dad's. And get there, throw the stuff in the car. My dad's like, well, you want me to drive? I said, no, I'm wound up. I'll drive. So I drove from Safford across New Mexico into Nogales, or not Nogales, crap, El Paso. And I was supposed to take the I-20 split right outside of El Paso. I can't remember how far it was. Well, right now it's 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm starting to get tired. And I saw that I'd missed the exit or the split, and everybody else is asleep in the van. And I get the map out, and I'm trying to keep the light down. I'm like, okay, there's something up here. I can cut back up to 20. And I'm doing 66, 67 miles an hour in a 65 zone going through Texas. And all of a sudden, these yellow lights, boom, in the median. And I'm like, what the hell? Get up a little ways, get pulled over. And the highway patrolman was actually legitimately pissed that I was doing 2 miles an hour over the speed limit. And my dad wakes up, and he's like, excuse me, officer, what's going on, this and that? And that's when he said, well, he was doing 67 and the 65 and blah, blah. And my dad's like, he's looking around. He sees a sign. He looks at me and goes, you're lost, aren't you? And I goes, yeah. And so my dad explains to the highway patrolman, you know, hey, we're driving to Kentucky for my father's funeral. My son's tired. He seems to have gotten off track. How can we get to the 20? After that, the highway patrolman is all cool. Oh, just go up here 5 more miles and make a left. And, you know, it turned out to be like a 25-mile detour, but got on the 20 for about 5 minutes. My dad's like looking at me and goes, get in the back. And I slept from there until we pulled into Papa's driveway in Henderson, Tennessee. I don't know what time it was. I was out because I think I'd been up for almost 36 hours.
Wow. That's a long time.
That is a long time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I can imagine why you got lost now.
Heck yeah.
Being up that long. Yeah. It's not safe to be driving when you're that exhausted. We've heard, what was that? I think it was Sam on episode two. He was saying how I think it was like 40, 50 some hours straight.
It was crazy.
They were snorting coffee.
Yeah.
Like to stay awake. Have you ever tried snorting coffee?
No.
No.
I really don't drink coffee, so.
No, I didn't say drink. I said snort.
No. I have allergies that I don't snort anything except for Flonase. And that's it.
There you
go. I got you, man. I got you. Alan, man, it's been great talking to you and catching up with you and having some of these stories pop up on the show, man. I appreciate you coming on.
No, I appreciate it. I told you I had a lot more stuff when we talked on the confessional, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool having you on. It really was. And you know what? It's, like I said, it's cool to put a name and a face with the story, because I tell you what, that story of the guy running next to you has freaked me out so many nights in listening to Derek Hayes' show, that it's just kind of neat to actually see the person and get a chance to talk to him myself.
Yeah.
It's just a crazy story. It's like, wow. And like I said, I mean, I drive at night, and I can't tell you, every time I listen to that story, every time that show comes on, you know, because I go back through and listen to them again.
Yeah.
And I look over at my passenger side window just to make sure there's nobody there. It's crazy, but it's true. It is true.
Yeah, I imagine driving at night and stuff, hearing a story like that, it would...
Yeah, it's a little freaky.
It gets in your head.
It does.
It gets in your head.
Yes, it does.
Well, this guy lived through it, so there you go. Yeah.
Well, give you another quick one from driving at night.
Yeah.
Of course, I was going home from 29 Palms, and I was about 40 miles out of Phoenix by Luke Air Force Base. And I said, that old Chevy pickup didn't have any air conditioning. It had, you know, good old-fashioned 260 air conditioning.
Yeah.
Had the windows down, and I'm cruising along, and I don't really hear anything until he's right on top of me. And it's this guy, and I don't know what series airplane it was. He couldn't have been more than 100, 125 feet off the deck in the median. And just to get past me, he pushed into the afterburners and went straight up. And I got a flyby on the I-10.
Wow.
At, you know, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And what referenced that was Rogan's interview with pilot David Fravor, and him talking about them doing that kind of shit on people, you know, on stretches of freeway.
Wow.
I remember hearing him talk about doing that to people. And so you actually experienced that, huh?
I heard that, and I wanted to reach through my earbuds and slap the taste out of his mouth.
Wow, I hear that. Oh, my word.
Oh, man.
That's crazy.
I scared the shit out of me. I almost went through the median.
I bet. Oh, my word. That is crazy. That is freaking crazy.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be scary. Holy crap.
Yeah.
There's an airport not far from where I live, and I take my son up because there's this like little road that goes right at the bottom of the airstrip.
Mm-hmm.
And so I take him up there sometimes to see if we can see planes come in.
Yeah, just watch them land and take
off. And we haven't had that chance. Like every time we go up there, we sit and nothing happens and stuff. But I can imagine driving your vehicle and having that happen. No thanks.
No way.
No thanks.
Holy crap. That's nuts. That's nuts. Well, you know what, Alan? I wanted to say thank you for your service. We really do appreciate it. I know it sounds cliche a lot of times, but we really do mean it. We do appreciate the service that you did for your country. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, and you're welcome.
Absolutely. We love the servicemen.
Yes, we
absolutely
do.
Absolutely love them. Yeah, well, I say men, meaning all-inclusive.
Yeah, I know, but you need to be.
I'm a real 1990s kind of guy.
You're like more like a 1950s kind of guy. When it comes to that.
Yeah. Well, I don't speak too good. Probably shouldn't be podcasting.
You do fine.
Alan, man, it's been good talking to you.
All right, have a good one.
Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, Dad, what can they do?
They can share the show. Hit the share button at the bottom of the page there and share the show. Share it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Share it with your friends and family. That's what we want you to do. Just share it.
Just share the show. As long as you can share it on these platforms. We don't know what's going to happen as far as censorship goes. And if they take down accounts, eventually the censorship and the removal of people will merge its way into the podcast industry. And you guys listen to the show. I say things that people's feels could be hurt. And I'm not going to change who I am because it is still America. We still do have the First Amendment for now. And, you know, I'm going to continue doing what I do. And hopefully we'll be here for that ride long term. But, you know, until things change, just keep sharing the show wherever you can. And hopefully, you know, we can ride this out and the world can normalize. But I ain't counting on it.
Me neither.
No. But on that happy note, take care, friends, and keep the hammer down in the hammer lane.
I was out on the West Coast trying to make a buck, and things didn't work out. I was down on my luck. Got tired of roaming and bumming around, so I started thumbing back east toward my hometown. Made a lot of miles the first 2 days, and I figured I'd be home in a week if my luck held out this way. But the third night I got stranded way out of town at a cold, lonely crossroads. Rain was pouring down. I was hungry and freezing, done caught a chill, when the lights of a big semi topped the hill. Lord, I sure was glad to hear them air brakes come on, and I climbed in that cab where I knew it'd be warm. At the wheel sat a big man. He weighed about 210. He stuck out his hand and said with a grin, "Big Joe's the name." I told him mine, and he said the name of my rig is Phantom 309. Well, I asked him why he called his rig such a name. He said, "Son, this old Mac can put them all to shame. There ain't a driver or a rig a running any line that's seen nothing but taillights from Phantom 309. Well, we rode and talked the better part of the night when the lights of a truck stop came in sight. He said, "I'm sorry, son, this is as far as you go, 'cause I gotta make a turn just on up the road." Well, he tossed me a dime as he pulled her in low and said, "Have yourself a hot cup on old Big Joe." When Joe and his rig roared out in the night, in nothing flat he was clean out of sight. Well, I went inside and ordered me a cup, told the waiter Big Joe was setting me up. Oh, you could have heard a pin drop. It got deathly quiet, and the waiter's face turned kind of white. "Well, did I say something wrong?" I said with a halfway grin. He said, "No, this happens every now and then. Every driver in here knows Big Joe. But son, let me tell you what happened about 10 years ago. At the crossroads tonight where you flagged him down, there was a busload of kids coming from town. And they were right in the middle when Big Joe topped the hill. It could have been slaughter, but he turned his wheels. Well, Joe lost control, went into a skid, and gave his life to save that bunch of kids. And there at that crossroads was the end of a line for Big Joe and Phantom 309. But every now and then, some hiker will come by, and like you, Big Joe will give him a ride. Here, have another cup, and forget about the dime. Keep it as a souvenir from Big Joe and Phantom 309.